Welcome to another episode of the Ethics Reporter. On July 4th, 2025,
for Independence Day, the President of the United States signed a bill into law. The choice of that date was intentional. It was branding. The bill was called the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. It was framed as a celebration of American freedom, lower taxes, less government, the freedom to keep what you earn, but buried inside nearly 1,000 pages of legislation. A document so long that most members of Congress who voted for it hadn't read it. A $3.4 trillion transfer of wealth from the poor to the rich, from the sick to the healthy, from working families to billionaire heirs, paid for with the health care of 70 million Americans, paid for with food assistance for the hungry, paid for by 446 hospitals now weeks away from shutting their doors, and tucked inside page after page of tax code language and committee reconciliation jargon, was a provision that stripped federal courts of the power to hold the executive branch in contempt. In other words, a president who violates a court order can no longer be legally compelled to comply. The bill that was sold as freedom made the executive branch untouchable. This is what we are talking about today on the Ethics Reporter. Not a theory, not a prediction. This is law. It has been signed, enacted, and it is right now tearing through the lives of millions of Americans who were never told that was actually in it. I'm your host. This is the story of the most corrupt piece of legislation in modern American history. To understand why this bill is corrupt, you have to understand what it actually is and how it was passed. The One Big Beautiful Bill Act, officially known as H.R. 1 of the 119th Congress, is a budget reconciliation bill. That term, budget reconciliation, is important. It is a procedural mechanism in the Senate that allows certain types of legislation to pass with a simple majority vote, 51 senators instead of 60. It was designed for narrow budget adjustment. It was never intended to be used to rewrite healthcare policy, restructure food assistance program, permanently alter the tax code, and kneecap the federal judiciary, all in the same bill. But this is exactly what happened. The bill runs nearly 1,000 pages. It was written not primarily by elected officials, but by lobbyists and corporate attorneys representing the industry that stood to benefit most. It was rushed through the House of Representatives on May 22, 2025, without a full hearing, without full committee markup, with members in some cases voting on final amendments. They had hours, not days, to review. The Senate passed its version on July 1st, 2025 by a vote of 51 to 50. Vice President J.D. Vance cast the tie-breaking vote. One vote, one person, not elected to that position by the American people, decided this bill would become law. 4 days later, it was signed on the 4th of July. Now, here is what the administration told the American people the bill was about. It was about extending the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which was set to expire. No tax on tips, no tax on other overtime, a new deduction on car loan interest, a raised salt deduction, that's the state and local tax deduction, from $10,000 to $40,000. They said it was a bill for working Americans. And some of these provisions do exist in the bill. They are real, and in isolation, some of them sound reasonable. But here is the thing about a 1,000-page bill. The provisions people see on the television are the packaging. The real product is what's buried inside. So let's open it up. Let's look at what it actually is. Section by section, provision by provision, let's follow the money. Let's talk about who benefits from this law. The Center of American Progress, a nonpartisan policy research organization, ran the numbers. Their analysis found out that one big, beautiful bill delivers $100 billion in tax cuts to the top 1% of American earners, $10 billion to the wealthiest American in history, living through the greatest concentration of wealth this country has ever seen. And it does this while simultaneously cutting more than $1 trillion from programs serving the poorest Americans. Let that sit. $100 billion flow upward, $1 trillion taken from the bottom. This is not an accident. It is a deliberate, documented policy. Let's walk through the mechanisms, because when you see how the money moves, you cannot call this anything other than a legal plunder. When a wealthy person dies, their heirs could previously inherit up to $40 million per individual, $28 million for a married couple, tax-free. That was already extraordinarily generous. Most Americans will never come near that threshold. The estate tax in this previous form applied to only a tiny fraction of a percent of Americans. The one big beautiful bill raised the exemption to $50 million per person, $30 million for couples, and made it permanent. Previous exemptions were set to expire. This one doesn't. The cost to the Federal Treasury, $212 billion through 2034, according to the Center of American Progress. Who benefits? The heirs of a few thousand estates per year, a tiny sliver of Americans who are already among the most privileged people on earth. These are not small business owners worried about passing a family farm to their children. Those people were already protected. This provision exists for one purpose: to protect dynastic wealth at scale, billion-dollar family fortunes, the children and grandchildren of the ultra-rich who did not earn that money, did not build those companies, and whose primary contribution to society was just being born into the right family. The SALT deduction. The state and local deduction allows taxpayers who itemize their federal taxes to deduct certain state and local taxes they already paid. In 2017, the Tax Cuts and the Jobs Act, that reduction at $10,000 per year, the new bill raises it to $40,000 annually through 2029. There is a version of this argument that sounds populist. Blue state residents, particularly known in New York, New Jersey, and California, were disproportionately hurt by the cap, and raising it relieves pressure on middle-class homeowners in high estates. That argument is real. Some middle-class families do benefit from this. But the nonpartisan Tax Foundation found something important, because the SALT deduction only benefits those who itemize, and itemizing only makes sense at higher income levels. The vast majority of the benefits flow to high earners. CNBC reported that the state version of the bill contained no income cap, meaning the wealthiest taxpayers could access an effectively unlimited SALT deduction. The people who benefit most from the $40,000 deduction are people paying $40,000 or more in state and local tax per year. Those are not middle class homeowners. Those are the wealthy. The carried interest loophole is one of the most infamous provisions in the American tax code. It allows hedge fund managers and private equity executives to have their compensation taxed at the company gains rate,
typically around 20% rather than the ordinary income tax rate, which can be as high as 37%. Every serious economist across the political spectrum has described this loophole as indefensible. Trump himself, in his 2016 campaign, promised to close it. He didn't. He promised again in 2024. He didn't. And the one big beautiful bill preserved it untouched. The hedge fund managers who pay a low tax rate than their secretaries will continue to do so, because the people who wrote this bill were in some case those same hedge fund managers and their lobbyists. Deep in the bill are significant expansions of community zone programs, a tax break for investing in designated low-income areas created in the 2017 tax law. In theory, it was designed to attract investments to struggling communities. In practice, it has repeatedly documented as a vehicle for wealthy investors to receive massive tax benefits on projects that were going to happen anyway. Luxury condos in gratifying neighborhoods, hotels in already booming markets, while the poor communities the program was supposed to help remain poor. The One Big Beautiful Bill expands and extends opportunity zone benefits while weakening requirements that investments actually improve conditions. Forbes analyzed this provision and noted that primarily benefits wealthy investors looking to defer capital gain taxes, investors whose lobbyists were in the room when the language was drafted. Here is what we need to be very precise, because the administration was not lying when they said the bill includes no tax on tips or overtime. Those provisions exist, they are real. But look at the fine print. The tips income deduction is capped at $25,000 and expires in 2028, 3 years from now, before the new presidential election cycle fully plays out. The estate tax exemption, permanent forever, paid for in part by the expiration of the very benefits that were sold to working Americans as the reasons to support this bill. This is the legislative bait and the switch at its most refined. Give workers something temporary, give billionaires something permanent. Call the whole package a gift to working families. I hope no one reads the fine print. A Boston College researcher published an analysis that did exactly that, contrasted the temporary worker benefits against the permanent elite benefits. Their conclusion: the biggest gain flow to the top of the income distribution. That is not opinion. That is the math. None of this is free. $3.4 trillion added to the national debt has come from somewhere. And the bill is very specific about who foots it. Medicaid is the federal state health insurance program that covers over 90 million Americans. The elderly in nursing homes, children in low-income families, people with disabilities, working adults who earn too little to afford private insurance. Medicaid is not a fringe welfare program. It is the backbone of rural America. It is what keeps small-town hospitals alive. It is what stands between millions of Americans and financial ruin when they get sick. The Congressional Budget Office, the nonpartisan independent storekeeper of legislation, estimated that One Big Beautiful Bill will cost about 10 million and 17 million Americans to lose their Medicaid coverage, depending on the estimates used. The higher figure accounts for work requirements and broader eligibility restrictions. The lower figure is the CBO's more conservative projection. Either number is a catastrophe. Let's talk about the work requirements, specifically because they are the centerpiece of Medicaid changes and they are dressed up in the language that sounds reasonable.
The bill requires that most Medicaid recipients between the age of 19 and 64 work volunteers or participate in job training for at least 80 hours per month in order to remain eligible. If you cannot prove it, you lose coverage. The administration argues this was about the accountability, ensuring that its able-bodied people are contributing to society. It sounds reasonable if you picture a healthy 25-year-old sitting on a couch. But the data tells a different story. Research conducted prior to the bill's passage found that the overwhelming majority of Medicaid recipients who are not working are either already employed, many in jobs that are difficult to document precisely, or have not working because they are caregivers for children or disabled family members, or because they themselves have a medical condition that limits their work capacity. In other words, the people who lose coverage under these work requirements are largely people who cannot work, not people who won't work. And the reporting system is deliberately difficult to navigate. Enrollment systems in many states are outdated. Documentation requirements are onerous. People who are legitimately eligible will be dropped from the coverage because they could not navigate a system stacked against them. The CBO estimated 10.9 million people will lose coverage, especially due to work requirements and related provisions. Nearly 11 million people, most of them working people, most of them poor people, many of them sick. This is not theoretical anymore. We are now months past the signing of this bill, and the consequences are already visible. Forbes published a list in early 2026 of 446 hospitals at risk of closing due to the Medicaid cuts in the One Big Beautiful Bill. 446 people. These are not facilities in wealthy urban settings with large private insurance pools. These are not rural hospitals, community hospitals. The only emergency room with 50 miles for millions of Americans. CNN reported that hospitals across the country are already making cuts, staffing reduction, service elimination. In Farmville, Virginia, Southside Community Hospital closed its labor and delivery unit, citing significant financial and operational challenges caused by reduction in federal healthcare funding. In Goshen, Indiana, Elkhart General Hospital ended obstetric services in 2026 January. Think about what that means for a pregnant woman in a rural Indiana. The nearest hospital that can deliver her baby is now an hour away. This is what this bill produced. This is what they traded for $15 million estate tax exemption for billionaires. The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, called SNAP, what most people call food stamps, was cut by at least $120 billion in the bill. The same work requirements logic applies. If you receive SNAP benefits and you are a working age adult, you now have to prove you are working or in training. The same problems apply. The paperwork, the barriers, the fact that most SNAP recipients already work, often in gig work or irregular jobs that are difficult to document for a government verification system. The CBO's analysis of the combined impact is stark. The lowest 10% of American earners, the poorest Americans, will see their income fall by 3.1% as a result of this law by 2034. Meanwhile, the wealthiest 10% will see their income rise by 2.7% over the same period. This bill transferred money from people who are already struggling to survive to people who are already the wealthiest humans in recorded in history by federal law on the 4th of July. Now, we need to talk about the part of the bill that had almost nothing to do with taxes or healthcare. The part buried so deep that even many policy analysts missed them until the bill was signed, because this is where we stopped talking about corruption as a policy philosophy and start talking about corruption as an architecture of power. Buried inside the One Big Beautiful Bill is a provision that restricts the ability of federal courts to hold the executive branch in contempt for violating court orders. At least with respect to litigation pending against the Trump administration at the time of the passage. Let that be very clear. The executive branch lobbied Congress to pass a law that prevents courts from enforcing their orders against the executive branch. The Daily Beast reported on this provision in May 2025, calling it a hidden threat to democracy. The Christian Science Monitor described it as a measure that would strip courts of the power to hold the executive branch in contempt. Constitutional law scholars were alarmed across the board. Erwin Chemistry, Dean of UC Berkeley School of Law, and one of the most prominent constitutional scholars in the country, publicly warned that this provision was a direct assault on the separation of powers, the foundational principle of American constitutional government. Think about what this means in practice. A federal judge issues an order, the administration must stop deporting people without due process hearing. The administration ignores it. Normally, the judge can hold the administration in contempt, impose fines, and compel compliance under this bill. That enforcement mechanism is neutered. This is not an accident. In the months before the bill was signed, the Trump administration had been defying court orders repeatedly on immigration, on federal firings, on agency operations. Courts were pushing back. Judges were issuing injunctions. And then, inside the reconciliation bill about the taxes and health care, a provision appeared that the handcuffed the judiciary. The Campaign Legal Center concluded that this provision would severely harm checks and balances and undermine the rule of law. It passed. It is law. The same bill that added $3.4 trillion to the national debt also cut IRS enforcement funding. Think about that logic for a moment. We are adding trillions to the debt. We need tax revenue, and we are simultaneously making it harder for the IRS to collect the taxes we are owed. The IRS has estimated that for every dollar investment in enforcement, approximately $6 is returned in recovered tax revenue, overwhelming from wealthy individuals and corporations using complex offshore structure and paper schemes. The so-called tax gap, the difference between tax owed and tax collected, is estimated at over $600 billion annually. Rather than close that gap, the bill widened it. The IRS workforce was cut. Audit capacity for high-volume, high-income individuals was reduced. The wealthy got a tax cut and then got a reduced likelihood of being audited on top of it. Also buried in this bill, a 10-year moratorium on state-level AI regulation. No state for 10 years can meaningfully regulate artificial intelligence development or deployment within its borders. This provision was placed in a budget reconciliation bill. A bill with about taxes and spending, which is the only reason it could bypass the 60 votes threshold in the Senate. It had nothing to do with the budget, but it benefited the tech industry, whose executives had been funding political campaigns. So it was inserted, buried, and signed. The Campaign Legal Center noted that this provision had no legitimate connection to the budget, and its inclusion was a direct exploitation of the reconciliation process to achieve legislative goals that could not have passed to the normal order. Now we need to ask the hardest question: how does something like this happen in a democracy? A law that stripped 17 million people of health insurance, that cut food assistance for the hungry, that handed $10 billion to the wealthiest Americans, that raised the national debt by $3.4 trillion, that simultaneously kneecapped the judiciary. A law like that should not be able to pass. In a functioning democracy, the people would say no, their representatives would say no, the process would stop. So how does it pass? The answer is money, and it is not subtle. The 2010 Supreme Court decision in Citizens United versus FEC removed limits on corporate and outside spending in elections. It created the framework for what we now call dark money, unlimited, often untraceable funds flowing from billionaires and corporations into political campaigns through non-profit shells and PAC structures. In the 2024 election cycle, that spending hit record levels. Billionaires' donors, concentrated overwhelmingly in one direction, spent hundreds of millions of dollars electing members of Congress who signed onto a legislative agenda that served in fundamental ways the donors themselves rather than their constituents. This is not a conspiracy theory. This is documented. Lobbyists for companies, for hedge funds, for private equity firms, for the fossil fuel industry, they were in the rooms where the provision of this bill were drafted. The revolving door between Capitol Hill staffers and K Street lobbying firms means that the people writing legislation often come from and will return to the very industries those laws are supposed to govern. The revolving door project documented in 2025 that major campaign donors, including figures ties to Wall Street and the tech industry, were populating cabinet departments and agencies responsible for regulating the very industry they came from. This is the architecture of legal corruption. No one paid a bribe. No one handled an envelope under a table. Instead, a donor writes a $50 million check to a super PAC. The super PAC elects a senator. The senator sits on the finance committee. The finance committee marks up a budget reconciliation bill. The bill contains a provision worth $212 billion to the estate of the wealthiest Americans. The provision passes. The donor families saves a fortune. The transaction is diffused. The paper trail is long and complicated, but the outcome is exactly what you would produce if you assumed the legislative process was for sale. Because in ways that are legal, documented, and increasingly entrenched, it is increasingly is. And the people who suffer for it are the mother in rural Indiana, whose nearest delivery room is now an hour away. The diabetic 50-year-old in Mississippi who just lost his Medicaid and cannot afford insulin. The family in California that now had to choose between rent and groceries when their SNAP benefits are cut. They didn't have a lobbyist. They didn't write a check. They had a vote, and in the current structure of American democracy, a vote, if it's the kind of vote that can be outspent, is increasingly easy to override. The One Big Beautiful Bill Act is a law. It was signed on July 4th, 2025. It has been implemented. The Medicaid requirements have kicked in. Hospitals are making cuts. Some have already eliminated services. The CBO projects that by 2034, the lowest income Americans will be measurably statistically poorer, while the wealthiest Americans will be measurably richer. The provision restriction for judicial contempt authority stands. The IRS courts are in effect. The AI regulation moratorium is active, and the national debt, the one that fiscal conservatives spent decades warning us about, the one used to justify cutting Medicaid and Social Security for 30 years, grew by $3.4 trillion to fund all. The same people who refused to extend the child tax credit because it would add to the deficit signed a bill that adds $3.4 trillion to the deficit, and they did it on Independence Day. The Ethics Reporter exists because the story of American corruption is not always a big cash or a wire transfer to a shell company. Sometimes, the corruption is written in plain sight. In legal language, inside a 1,000-page bill that nobody read, passed at midnight, signed at July 4th ceremony, with fireworks in the background. The question is whether we are all paying attention. The question is whether we are all willing to call it what it is. This is the Ethics Reporter. I am your host. If this reporting matters to you, please support us at theethicsreporter.com/donate. We have no corporate sponsors, no advertisers, no billionaire backers, just you. Well, see you at the next episode. Thank you.